Okay, guys, welcome to Truth with Tara. I am Tara Simon, your host, and today we have a very special guest, Mr. Chris Clifford. Did I get it right?
That was so Swedish of you.
Yeah, that was Swedish. Perfect.
Yeah. Actually perfect.
Okay. Well, I practiced just a little bit before and I really wanted to get it right. I would be surprised if most people watching this and listening to this don't know who you are, but in case they're under a rock and they don't, why don't you tell us really quick who you are, what you do, and clearly that's why you're here today.
Okay. So in short, my story is I'm a boy who came from the woods. And I played, like, we call it troubadour. I played bars and I played weddings for like 10 years or something. And then I entered Swedish Idol and I won that show. And then I got the chance to do America's Got Talent. So I went on that show and I became a semi-finalist.
Yes.
And now I'm a full-time working artist.
That's so great. I'm very familiar with reality vocal competitions. I was on The X Factor and I've had students of mine, vocalists on every single one of those shows, including America's Got Talent. Angelica Hale was on that show multiple times, top two, and multiple Golden Buzzer winners. So I know a thing or two about the back end of AGT as well. Tell me, between Idol and AGT, what was a better experience for you?
I mean, better, better experience. For me, it's the same thing. I mean, there's people there who works with this.
Yeah.
There's people behind the camera. There is the people who are the judges. They just there for they work.
Right.
If you use your opportunity right, you can get something very, very great out of it. And I just saw the same thing when I did those two shows, except that America's Got Talent is way bigger.
Yeah.
And much more famous people that are the judges, but both experiences were great.
Yeah.
And the only thing that was a downside to it was right after AGT, the pandemic hit.
Right.
So
wow.
A lot of doors closed because of that.
Wow. But, yeah. And you can't control stuff like that. Like, timing is just, you know, an inevitable.
Force majeure, I think it's called, right?
Force majeure, yes. Act of God, exactly. Or not act of God in that case. We won't get into that. However, you said something really key, Chris. Actually, you just said, if you use the opportunity right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of the things I tell my vocalists on these shows is just that. I say, listen, this is HD footage and 15 seconds of fame. If you don't have a plan with what you're going to do with it after, that's all it's going to be.
Yeah.
And I think that you actually have done a beautiful job, even in spite of the pandemic hitting after AGT, of leveraging your short HD footage, 15 seconds of fame online and on television, and really created a robust and beautiful career out of it. Now, it helps that you have a really cool look. I mean, you're like the coolest guy, you know. You've got this, who does that? How long does it take you to brush that thing? I don't know. But you've got this really cool look, and your voice is just, I mean, it's one of my favorite male voices, to be honest with you. And
well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
You.
And so how did you use that opportunity? Like, did you have a plan getting on the shows? Okay. Like, this is how I'm going to leverage this. Like, were you thinking of it during, like, what was your thought process there to leverage that opportunity, those opportunities?
The thing was that I tried out for Swedish Idol like a couple of times before I won the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I hadn't found myself in the sense of like finding my voice or finding the right way to perform. And I needed those couple of years to work stuff up and find my way of interpret emotions to get people to enjoy what I can tell them.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally won and I did AGT also, I kind of was so relaxed and just, here I am. And I think that that's one thing that people lean into, because I think they feel relaxed.
Mm-hmm. I do, when I listen to you, for sure.
Yeah, because I'm such a relaxed person, and I kind of want people to feel that. And when I sing a song, I want people to really get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed those years to figure that out and how to do that.
That's amazing.
And, yeah, and how I did it, I have no idea.
Well, that was going to be my next question, because so I have a couple of courses, and one in particular is called Voice On, and the whole point of the course is to help singers find their own unique sound. And there are some mechanisms that I've put in place to help artists do that as a vocal coach and as a performer myself. But I'm really interested, and I want to challenge you on that a little bit. Like, in those 2 years, it doesn't have to be like, oh, well, it was this exercise or da, da, but like, you said you had to find yourself, and you said that you, when you went on AGT, it was just kind of like, now here I am, like a this is me moment, right? So what went through your head? Maybe it was more of a mental than a vocal game. Did anything shift mentally in your mind over those 2 years? What was it? And did anything vocally also shift?
That was, you said it there. I think it was definitely a mental game for me, because as a young kid, I was very, very shy.
Really?
Very, very shy. And now you could wake me up three at night and like walk out on this stage with a million people and sing. And I would like, okay, sure. I can do it.
Wow.
I actually did that.
What?
On AGT. Yeah. Not a million people, but on,
probably on TV. Yeah.
Yeah. There was more than a million.
Yeah.
But at AGT on the second round, when I sang Something Like Me, my own song, when Brad Paisley was the, was the appearance. It was on the judge panel. They came up to me one day and they asked me, a guy just like, he was sick or something. He couldn't do it. Can you jump in now and do it right now? But I was supposed to do that like 2 days after or something.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, sure. I'll walk out there.
Wow.
Because I was in clothes and makeup and everything, because we were filming like sinks or what's it called? Like, yeah. And I was like, sure.
Always ready.
So I walked out. Yeah, I'm going to do it anyway, so it doesn't matter.
I just love that, Chris, that say yes and figure it out later mentality is something that I learned in theater. And it's served me also very well in my lifetime as a performer and as a coach. You know, you always want to be ready for whatever. And that truly, honestly, I think proves mastery of your craft. And so that's probably what you mean, I guess, right? Over those years, like you probably just honed your craft and still worked. And I love how you didn't get on a couple times first. And then you went to win the thing. Like, guys watching this and listening to this, you heard it from him. And this is a winner of these shows. That Chris has massive amounts of fans and views and streams and everything that you as an artist could ever dream of. And he got cut. He didn't make it twice. And he persisted and he persevered. And he, in the meantime, in the waiting, he didn't just like, throw his hands up. He worked and honed his craft. And now look at him today. I absolutely love that story. I love it even more now knowing that you didn't make it twice, actually.
Yeah, but there's something you have to trust. You have to trust yourself.
Mm.
And I don't know who said it, but it's not like I think it, but I heard someone said that when you walk into a room, you are the best at what you do.
Wow. Wow, I love
like,
that.
You have to keep that in mind because no one else can do exactly what you do. And I think I think that's something that I took with me many years ago when I heard it. There was some celebrity who said, I can't remember who, but I really felt that when I said it.
There's an air about that sort of like sloughs off this comparison spirit of walking into a room and wondering where you measure up, and instead not even asking a question, but knowing I'm the best at what I do because nobody is me. And I love that. That's so great. And really...
But you still have to keep your feet on the ground.
Humility.
Yeah, that's key.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, super important.
And you are a really humble guy. Like, you really are. You're so sweet.
I try to be.
Absolutely. Now, that also, to me, shines through in your music. So I've reacted to you a couple times, and I'm a fan of your writing as well as your voice. So I kind of want to get into that a little bit, too, because I know that we have a collab coming out soon, and that's taken a little while. We've been working on that since last year because you had an album release with your label, which is super exciting.
Yes.
So like I said, you are a humble yet massively talented artist. So it shines through in your songs, but I'm not really sure how. Like, when you write, what's your process and what kind of spirit do you bring into that?
Just before we started this podcast interview, I wrote a song out on the patio. For me, it's like, and I know that a lot of people can't do this, but thanks to my career, I've been able to buy like very nice guitars, old guitars, and they inspire me because they have something
interesting.
they carry a story with them. Mm. And I was sitting out on a patio with an old Gibson from 63.
Wow.
And I just started to play this thing that I'm pretty sure I played it before, but it sounds different when I play it on different guitars. Mm. And then I find this, I just like mumble sing, you know, there's no words or anything.
Yep.
I'm just trying to find some melody. And then I came up with this like story of about my father, like that he started out my story, like my life of who I am. And he's, and then I carry on from that. And then I sing the song like over and over again with mumbling words with that like story in mind. And then I find these sentences.
Wow.
And then usually, because I'm very picky. I'm pretty good at English, but I'm not awesome at it.
You're pretty awesome, Chris.
But I always want to try to write with people that I like and I enjoy working with. So when I'm done with the melodies and some phrasing and maybe perhaps the title of the song, I always contact a few guys, someone that I love to work with, and we finish it up.
Okay.
Someone who is American or English or English speaking.
Just to kind of dot the English I's and cross the English
T's. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I got
because
you.
Or else it might happen that some phrase, as we say it, becomes Swinglish. That's terrible.
That's great. Swinglish. I never heard of
no,
that.
No. It's the worst.
That's so good. Could you give me an example of Swinglish? I know it's hard on the spot. That would be so funny.
It's hard on the spot because it could be both like, oh, you can't say that. That's not proper English.
Uh-huh.
Or it's just a pronunciation. I wouldn't pronunciate it's so bad, but I know a lot of Swedish artists who really can't sing in English.
Really?
And I can't listen to that. And some of the it's not proper English in some songs, and I just can't stand that. It has to be proper.
Got you. Yeah. So would you say that you're a melody first kind of guy? Like you play the chords and you ideate the melody and then later on the lyrics come?
For sure.
Okay.
I would say like 90% of the time I find the melody just to find like the world of it, like the spirit of the song. And then you can kind of hear the some of the words when you just mumble sing.
It's kind of like they fall down, right? Like they're just flopping. Yeah. I'm more of a melodic writer than I am. I mean, I love writing lyrics, but I find when I co-write, I'm best paired with lyricists because hooks and melodies come so quick and easy to me, and it usually comes all together. Would you find that that's the same, like kind of it's the lyric thing that's last, or has there ever been a song where it was just like almost a poem first, lyrics first, and then you wrote the rest?
Oh, I got a story here.
Okay.
When I was in LA, and I've been working with these guys. They call themselves Braves. It's a band.
Okay.
And they asked me, what do you want to write about today? And I was like, yeah, you know, there's a thing that I can't stop thinking about. And that's about when my great-grandmother, right before she passed, she asked me to sing Hallelujah at her funeral.
Oh.
And I regret it so much that I didn't sing that song for her before she passed.
Oh.
And that's kind of bugging me because I see myself standing there next to her coffin and singing this song. And as I told them about this story, I was sitting there like talking for 15 minutes or something. And then when I was done, it got kind of emotional. And they were like, okay, here's the song. And they written down the things that I said.
Wow.
And then we had this melody in mind, and we've wrote my song "Cold at the Altar." I don't know if you heard it, but that song is about my great grandmother.
Oh my gosh!
So that started out as just like me telling them about the experience of doing that.
I just got goosebumps everywhere because I love you in that song. And your voice, there's something super extra authentic about your voice in that song. And so to know the story behind that now, thank you for sharing that. That's amazing.
Yeah, there's we never had in mind that there was going to be like a hit song or something. I usually don't when I write music. I just want to find a feeling. And that was so personal to me that I thought that no one was going to like find themselves in that song. But so many people have written to me about that song that it have helped them in some way.
Right.
And that's awesome. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and that, to me, that is the very essence and reason why people like you do what you do. I mean, the whole point is to bring life musically into the human experience. And yeah. I think I've heard actually more times than not talking to artists that the song that they didn't think was going to be the number one single ending up being the number one single was about something super personal, super real, super niche down that they didn't think would be relatable. And yet I think people so desperately need authenticity and vulnerability to be able to then show their emotion too. Like, you did it first, so now I can, type of thing. You set the context and the stage for that. Not only is it generous, right? And it's very, I'm sure, life-giving to you, therapeutic to you. But man, it just opens up this invitation for others to enter into that. And that's just exactly what the spirit of music is. So how has the album release gone? And tell us about that for those who don't know about it.
It's gone great. I would actually call this album a pandemic album, because I would say like 80-90% of the songs were written over Zoom when the pandemic hit. So like before that, I started my artist career in 2017 when I won Swedish Idol. Mm-hmm. And from then I only released like singles and EPs because I never had the time to do a full length album.
Right.
So now we had the time and we decided to work with this wonderful language barrier. wonderful producer, Peter Kvint. He is beautiful also. So. And we actually recorded the album in what's it called? I forget the name of the studio, but it's ABBA's old studio that they recorded there.
Okay, wow, that's awesome. Yeah. I can't remember the name right
Atlantic.
Now.
Atlantic Studios. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And the label that you're signed with is
Universal.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah. Just in case people want to know. The album release is going great. And of course, now comes the promotion of it live performance-wise, right? So I know that you're gigging a bunch, yeah?
Yeah. I'm out playing. And also, I had to mention, the little boy in me can't... I actually have it here, right next to me. This wasn't planned at all. And I have to... this is crazy that I can hold, like, the vinyl.
That's so cool, Chris. That's so cool. And I love that you got it in vinyl. That's so you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I take that as a compliment to be a vinyl artist. I've always dreamt of that.
Wow.
So I'm doing a lot of shows now promoting the album. And it's so much fun to see people around the world buying the record.
Yes.
And it's still crazy to me. I mean, I still feel like that little boy in the woods with 15 people in it, where I grew up. So.
Oh my, wait, 15 people in the woods?
Yeah, 15, yeah.
That's where you grew up?
Little village, yeah. That's where I grew up.
What's the village called?
It's called Hägernäs. It's
Hägernäs.
You said it very good. With the dialect and everything. Really
I
cool.
gotta move my head to do Hägernäs.
Oh, yeah.
What, 15 people. But, Chris, that's not even a village. That's like a large family.
Yeah. It was only my family. Like, there was only like one old lady down the road who wasn't in the family. So
in the woods.
Yeah. There is a lot of incest jokes here. You can make it up yourself. So
okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't go there. You said it, not me. But no. Wow. So how did you go from 15 people in the woods to like, you know, civilization later on?
A lot of things. When I grew up, I felt like this only happens in the movies or something, because the world to me was so small.
Yeah.
Growing up out in the country,
yeah.
on the countryside. I think that's also one reason to why I was so shy.
Shy, yes.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, you saw 14 people.
Yeah, and I grew out of it, I think, mainly because of performing.
Okay.
I started to perform when I was 16 or 17 years old.
Okay.
And a friend of mine, we got a gig in a little town. And the guy who hired us, after we were done, we went backstage and he was like, okay guys, how much you want?
Oh my gosh.
We were like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw everything flashing. I was like, I don't know, 100, 1 million, 500,000. I don't know. And the guy like slammed 2,000 crowns. That's $200.
Wow.
In our hands. And like, okay, here you go. And me and my friend, we were looking at each other and we're like, okay, we can do this.
We can do
that
this.
Was like the first paid gig that I did.
Yeah, I bet that did worlds for you boys' self-confidence. I mean, especially coming from a place where you did, like, clearly those are humble beginnings and probably, I would reckon, if it's in the woods, humble living circumstances too. So $200 is a lot of money.
Yeah. Back then, yeah. I mean, I was thrilled. And I started playing, from that on, I started to call places. I called bars and like, okay, I can play. And a lot of people didn't want to hire me at first. And then I practiced every day. And
you heard that, guys. He practiced every day. Keep going.
Yeah, I practiced every day. You got to get the hours in.
Yeah,
you know?
Get your reps in.
Yeah. And when I finally got some gigs, people kept hearing about this guy who played like one times a month in different cities.
Uh-huh.
And the bars started to talk to each other and everybody wanted to compete. They're like, I want to have him here now. I want to have him here now.
You got a bidding war on your hands.
Yeah. And I think that was the thing that caught my attention of like, okay, maybe I got something going on. Like,
you can do this.
Yeah, I can do this. We're talking like I think I was 20 years old or something.
Wow.
So that's 14 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm getting old.
Hey.
Okay, sorry.
What are you trying to say, Chris?
No, sorry.
So Chris, you've gone from 15 people in the woods growing up to playing in bars, getting $200 for your gig, all the way to Swedish Idol 6 years ago, and then AGT, America's Got Talent. And now you've just released your debut album. I mean, that sounds like a pretty huge rise to me. And I know that you're just getting started. I mean, this is your first full album. So what do you hope and what do you dream of for the next year to 5 years in your career?
First of all, I pinch myself a lot of times.
Yeah.
And just to be able to, from playing music and working with music, be able to buy my dream home is amazing. And I mean, I'm so overly happy, and I know that a lot of people don't get this opportunity. I don't want to take it for granted ever.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, the goal has never been to become like the biggest, the best, the richest, or whatever, because I know that happiness doesn't come from that.
Oh, it's from say the, it again.
It's the little things. I mean, you have to work. You have to have something to do.
Yep.
And to be able to do something that you love and get money from it.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yes.
And I can say that like my dream now is just to enjoy my beautiful friends and my family here in our beautiful new dream house and to be able to do like if I ought to be like in this place that I am now professionally for the rest of my life, I would be happy. But it's just a bonus if everything blows up even more.
Wow.
That's
because such I know a beautiful place to be in, Chris.
Yeah, but I know you can always chase the bigger car, the bigger house. The it's not going to make you happy. And I know that a lot of people have find this out by themselves. Mm-hmm. I know that like this big, whose name is it? Mr. Beast on YouTube. Mm-hmm. He's a very rich guy.
Yeah.
But he has his like regular house. He doesn't buy a bigger car.
Right.
Because you know that doesn't buy yourself happiness.
I love that so much. Your spirit of contentedness, Chris, just also oozes out in the way that you sing. One of the things I love so much about your voice, to be honest with you, is really there's no force. Like, I even force sometimes because I like to. I'm like an aggressive, like I can get after it. But your voice is so dynamic, but yet so relaxed and so content in itself. And I go back to what you said about really knowing who you are and standing in peace in that. Like it oozes out of the sound of your voice. And you're right. It does relax your listener, but it also kind of cocoons them in this safety of like, hey, I'm not going to let you down with the sound that you've come to expect from me because it's the essence of who I am. It's just, I can't be anything but this. So if I tried to be, I'd be failing at that because you're just so in the sweet spot of who you are. And that's, as a vocal coach, that's what I want for my artists. And honestly, I think that's what every singer wants. But there's this, like we talked about before, this comparison spirit of looking to the right or to the left. And I cannot tell you how many singers come to me saying, and your name has even been brought up, I want to sound like Mariah Carey or I want to sound like Chris Clafford. And I'm like, okay, but the thing is, what about their voices do you like? Because they already exist. Like there's already one of them. There's not one of you. So you may love Chris's raspy timbre. Okay, maybe that element, that mechanism of singing we can put into your voice. But don't say, oh, help me sound like this person. That's not, no. A, it's not integrous and it's impossible because you're not that person, right? And I just love how you don't try to sound like anybody else. I'm sure you have musical influences and I'd like to know who they are, but you are so wholly you.
You can always borrow things from people, artists that you like.
Yes.
I have an example. I really, really enjoyed Matt Corby. Do you know Matt Corby?
Yes.
Australian guy.
Interesting.
His first songs, and you know, he released Resolution and Brother, Souls of Fire.
Yes.
Really, really good songs. And he had this intense, low, airy, whispering, like, thing going on. Sleep numb and under my skin.
Oh.
And I really enjoyed that. So I kind of borrowed that thing from him.
Wow.
Because I felt like that was creating something. It was storytelling. It was intense. It was right up in your face. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to hear what else he had to say.
Yes.
So that's a thing you can borrow from people. But don't try to sound exactly the same because there's already a Mariah Carey or whatever.
And you know what, though? That whisper that you were talking about, that also so nicely accentuates your voice. You weren't trying to put into your voice something that was like a square peg into a round hole. Your voice already kind of wanted to do that. You were just taking the inspiration and feeding that part of your voice that sort of was already there to begin with and adding to it. So you just teased us, though, Chris, and that's very, very unkind of you, by singing like two really quick lines. So, I mean, how much would you mind singing the chorus of like that song that you just wrote out on the porch a cappella?
I actually don't have the words for the whole chorus.
Okay, sing us the line that you know then. Sing us something. I want to hear you sing more.
You know what? Because probably this song won't turn up as anything. Wait, just one second.
He's going to get his guitar. I knew it. I was like, he's gonna get his guitar.
I don't know. I don't know if the sound is good. Usually, when I write songs, I do this. Wanna live the story of running who I am, running and understanding if I can. There is always there to hold my hand. Starting off the story of who I am. Something like that. And when I write songs, I usually find that turnaround point. You know, it's very country to do that.
Yeah, right.
And this was also the wrong melody to what I had before, but it was kind of the right rhythm.
Right, when it's not big, I totally get that. Like sometimes, I always voice memo the songs I write, I don't know if you do, but when I go back, if it's a day later, if I got busy, I go back and I play it from memory, and then I listen to the voice note, and I'm like, that's not what it was. And then I have to decide, like, do you like that one better than the first one, or was the first one the best?
Yeah, my tip there is I, because I have a lot of memos.
I bet.
Memos? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you record it and then you wait. I don't know if it was this you said, but you wait a few weeks.
Weeks? Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And then you listen back to it because you have to forget it.
Wow. You and really let it bake in there.
Yeah, yeah. And when you hear it for the first time, if you feel something, keep it. Do something with it.
That.
Or if you feel like, okay, that's, I can't feel it. It's not hooky or
yeah.
There's nothing weeks there. Just that erase it.
That's quite the marinade process. I mean, I probably over time at one point or another have done weeks, but it wasn't intentional for sure. I kind of get obsessive with needing to finish something. And then I'll go back and tweak it, but I got to finish it first. Maybe that's what you're meaning. But do you do that with the whole song? Like, do you finish the whole song first and then forget it for weeks? Or is it just like the idea, like what you're singing right now?
There's some songs that I really feel like, okay, I'm gonna finish the whole melody.
Okay.
And then we're gonna write the lyrics and everything. But sometimes I only get like a short idea of like an intro, a verse or a chorus. And then I get, and then it's like, okay, that was that. I'll keep that. And if I listen to it later, maybe I'll hear the rest of the song.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because totally.
Sometimes you can't like spit out a whole song. You need to wait it out.
Yeah. Let inspiration strike and end where it ends. I get it. So Chris, have you ever, I don't know this about you actually, have you ever taken lessons?
I took lessons when I was in, I think you say high school.
Okay.
When I was 16.
Okay.
16, 17 years old or something.
Yeah.
And she was a lovely lady, but when we did like 3 or 4 sessions, and I remember she asked me in the first lesson, what do you want to learn? And I said, I want to be able to mean what I sing.
At 16, that's what you asked.
Yeah, yeah. And she was like, what?
Yeah, that's like a Gandhi question for singers.
Yeah. It's very confusing. But
I think it's amazing.
Like, yeah, I felt like everybody else that I was listening to that I liked, I felt what they were saying. And I when I sang, I felt like it didn't feel like I meant the things that I sang.
Were you trying to mean them?
I'm trying. Yeah, I was trying.
Okay, but you just didn't believe yourself.
Probably, I don't know. And we did 3 sessions, and then I felt like, okay, she's only telling me to like, this is the way we sing. Uh-huh. Now we're gonna do it also.
Right.
I was expecting like, okay, this is the way you sing, and we're gonna, I don't know the word, emphasize it.
Yes, and accentuate on what you have. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but that never happened. So I stopped. So I only took like 3 or 4 lessons.
Literally 3 or 4 lessons in your life.
Yeah.
This should be alcohol. It's not, but it should be after that. Goodness, Chris! Like you're truly someone that like is like vocally prodigic. I mean, for 3 or 4, that's not even lessons. You can't even say you took lessons, Chris. That's just ridiculous. Like that's a month.
And I don't even know. I mean, I have nothing to compare it to. In my world, it's like everybody can do this, but I know it's not. So
no. It's not. This is just what's called like, you know, a God-given talent. And it's just your nature. It's in your essence. And you know, people, This is actually a hot button topic, and a lot of people are on different sides of this statement that you are born a great singer, and you're living proof that you can be born a great singer, right? You are absolutely living proof.
I mean, you are. I got a lot of recordings from when I was young. It doesn't sound great.
Would argue that that's puberty too in a boy's voice. It can be very drastic. Would you say that like pre-puberty it was very different, or like when you were gigging in bars it was different?
I actually started out when I was singing. I started out just singing in falsetto.
Only. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
That was the only thing I could do because I think I was mimicking women singing.
Okay.
Yeah, or something, because I felt like they had the higher voices or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then by a coincidence, I was in a metal band when I was a teenager, and we were recording an EP, and I didn't know these guys. They took me in as an audition or something, and I okay. got to the studio, and I was standing in the booth, seeing them through the glass, you know, in the studio.
Yeah, right.
And I was singing this chorus, which they wanted me to belch it, you know, with
right.
like whoa,
and metal, yeah.
But I couldn't do it because I had never had done it
sure.
before. Yeah. Sure. And they were like, can you just push it? Be angry. And I was like, I was so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I wanted to prove to these guys that I could sing. So sure. I was just pushing it.
Yeah.
And I probably did it the wrong way. You know, you can really hurt your throat when you do it the wrong way.
Sure. Yes, you can.
But that was my way of finding out where to do it.
Wow.
That, you know, distortion thing that you can do with your voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they pushed me into doing it and finding it. And then from that on, I could experiment with it myself.
Yeah. I mean, hey, necessity is the mother of all invention, right?
Yeah.
And you were right there, and it was sink or swim, fight or flight. And but there's a through line in what I'm hearing in this time together, Chris, and that's you just always kind of said yes, and you just sort of stepped into whatever opportunity was given, and you're like, yeah, I'm ready. I'm gonna figure that out.
Yeah.
Mentally, like, that's something that is harder to teach than teaching someone to hit a note, to be honest.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of times in my life I've taken the long road to learn something. It was the same thing with ad-libbing. When you sing, you ad-libs. I was asked to do a demo vocals on a demo for Adam Lampert.
Oh, okay.
They said they were going to pitch it to Adam Lampert. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay, yeah, cool. Because they thought that my voice fit into the song.
Okay.
And then I was standing there. There was just one guy in the studio behind the glass. And I was in the booth. And we did the song. And then when we were pretty much done, he said, okay, just do some ad-libs. And I've never heard that word.
Really?
I was very young. Yeah, and I was like, okay. I was so nervous.
Aww.
And then he just pushed record at the end of the last chorus.
Yeah.
And I just stood there like, okay, what should I do? And then the guy was like, boss, what are you doing? You were supposed to ad-lib over this. Okay, what's that?
Oh, bless your heart.
Oh, yeah. And he told me like, oh, you know, some tales here and there. You can change up the melody and blah, blah, blah. He was explaining how to do it.
Yeah.
And I was so nervous. And then just, okay, record once again.
Oh, my
gosh. And I just stood there like, okay. And I just did this. Remember, like, yeah. Woo.
Woohoo. No.
Doing like that. And I was so embarrassed. And
God.
I could see the guy, he was looking down at his keyboard.
Just like, oh.
And slowly his head was like going up.
Oh, no.
I was so embarrassed.
Bless it.
And then he was like, okay, pause. And he's like, okay, we're done for today.
Oh, that's so harsh. You poor thing.
Yeah. But I learned from it. And then after that, I looked it up and I learned how to do it. But it was a movie, like a movie scene thing. I felt like you could put that in a movie.
You know, here's the thing. Here's why that happened to you, Chris. I'm going to tell you exactly why. You are such a prolific singer and you're so naturally gifted that when someone hears you, they assume, even at that age, you know what the heck you're doing. That this is not your first rodeo and that you've been trained.
Yeah.
And none of those things were true. And so that guy's like, well, this dude's jerking me around. What's he doing? What's wrong with this dude? You know?
Yeah, I was much younger back then. But now, I mean, if I don't know anything, I will ask. And I mean, everybody from we're all kids from start. We don't know.
Yep.
We don't know how to do everything. We have to learn it. So
yes.
I'm not embarrassed when I don't understand or.
That's
something, but
really
that was so much younger, and I was so embarrassed. Like,
so Chris, now that you have, you know, this house, and you've been with, what's her name?
Her name is Bob.
Bob. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now that you have this house and you've been with Bob for so long, yeah. what do you think about kids in the future?
We have two dogs right now, and I feel like they're my kids.
Yes, totally.
And also the older dog, she is almost 12 years old. She's a pit bull, and she's kind of on the end of her life.
Okay.
So we're really taking care of her right now.
Sure.
That's our main thing right now.
Right.
Yeah,
makes sense.
And we love her to death.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll wrap up here, but let me ask you this. Coming from that kid in the woods, right, and coming to where you are now, if you could speak to the audience, whether those who are watching or listening, and give them some encouragement or advice if they're sort of aspiring singers, what would you tell them to do, or what advice would you give them?
I mean, just love what you do and don't do it for fame.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when people come up to me when I want to go on Idol, I want to be famous. I'm like, okay, you're wrong from the start. That's not the thing. You have to love what you do, or else something great won't come out of it. I mean, that's the main thing that I think about all the time. I have to, because nobody can force me to do anything. I only want to do the things that I love and that I believe in.
Yeah.
And that's key to me.
I love that. I really do. If something's going to cause you to quit, then you should let it, because you don't love what you're doing enough.
Yeah.
And I love that. And it's not for fame, for sure, because more times than not, you are not famous from that thing. And I know, like, people who are listening and watching might be saying, well, that's easy for him to say. He's Chris, you know? And so he's already gotten that thing. But I truly don't believe at least you started this out to become famous.
When I was a kid, of course, I said I want to be a big rock star when I was very young.
Uh-huh.
But it's from, I would say, from 20 years old or something, I really started to enjoy playing for people and just be there together with people.
Yeah.
Always when I do shows, I want people to feel like we're in this room together, not me up on a pedestal and they're in the audience. Like, I want us to be on the same level. That's important to me.
I love that. And that also shines through in your music as well. You truly are a musical example of who you are in person. And I think that's really the secret sauce to your success, Chris.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And to that end, I'm super honored to be doing this duet with you. We're going to be releasing it soon after this podcast is released. Chris and I talked back and forth via Instagram, and we were going through a bunch of songs and landed on You Are the Reason, originated, I think, by Callum Scott and Leona Lewis first.
Yeah.
So we're putting our own little spin on it, and you will be hearing that soon. We're really excited about it.
Such a cozy song. I love that song.
It is. It's beautiful. And I just love your voice in it. I'm like, as I'm listening, I'm like fangirling as I'm trying to cut my part. Like, oh, okay, wait, I got to sing now.
Likewise. Back at you.
Oh, you're
back
so sweet. You. Well, thank you so much for being on today, Chris, and just giving us a glimpse into your life, into your career, into your heart, and into your mind. I so appreciate you're so generous with your time and with the things that you've told me about today. So I honor you, I bless you, and I just pray that your ladder in your career be greater than your past.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for having me right back at you. Thank you
so much.
You're
so welcome. All right, guys, that's Chris Clifford.
Good.
And we will see you on the next one.
Take care.
Bye.
Thank you.